Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 10th of September. It's December. Oh, yeah. Who turned my blue state red? Why poor areas vote for politicians who want to slash the safety net? Written by Alec McGillis, appearing late in November in the New York Times. He begins, it's one of the central political puzzles of our time. Parts of the country that depend on the safety net programs supported by Democrats are increasingly voting for Republicans who favor shredding that net. Why is that? And he pays special attention to what happened in Kentucky. He looks at the state of Maine, and he looks at West Virginia as well. He is with us this hour. He covers politics for ProPublica. He also was a staff writer at Slate, covered national politics for the New Republic, and was a national reporter for the Washington Post, where he was part of the team whose coverage of the Virginia Tech shooting won the 2008 Pulitzer Prize for breaking news. Also with us this hour is Professor Joseph Varga. He's a professor in labor studies at Indiana University, Bloomington. And his piece, Alec's piece in the Times, generated quite a few letters. Joseph's was one of them. Professor Varga is a former Teamster shop steward and a longtime labor activist. He worked for the IBEW and the New York State Working Families Party. He's been a truck driver, a forklift operator, and he has done service work. We'll meet both of them momentarily. I do want to say just at the top of the show that you by now well know that we're in our winter membership drive, year-end membership drive. And this hour, these are good hours for you. We have one of those dollar-for-dollar matches up to $1,800, so I urge you to pledge this particular hour, and you can do so at 888-202-2552, or you can go to WPR.org. For you to join this conversation of who turned my blue state red, we talk a lot about these kinds of issues, and I think some of you may want to join us. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and phone lines will be open for you. So, thanks very much. Alec, thank you very much for joining us and for writing the article.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Professor Joseph Varga, thank you very much for joining us as well. Professor Varga, are you there? Well, he doesn't seem to be there. So we'll start with you, Alec, and we'll have him with us in just one moment. Well, you got a lot of response to this article because it is something that people are looking at and trying to figure out what's happening in certain states. You concentrate on Kentucky and West Virginia and Maine. Is there something similar going on among people in all of those states?
Well, all those areas are places that have are really struggling economically. Eastern Kentucky, West Virginia, especially southern West Virginia, and then rural Maine are having a really tough time of it these days. And as a result, you are seeing in these areas rising levels of dependency on various social safety net programs, whether it's food stamps, the SNAP program, or Social Security disability for people who are unable to work, or the expansion of Medicaid, which has gone through in Kentucky and West Virginia. Maine, on the other hand, has not accepted that that benefit. But in all these places, you're seeing this increased safety net usage, and at the same time, you are seeing these areas voting repeatedly, more and more voting for Republicans, whether it's voting for the new governor in Kentucky who said he was going to slash the new Medicaid expansion, or in Maine, voting for a governor, reelecting a governor in Maine, Paul LePage, conservative Republican who's very, very anti-welfare. And so the big question in these places is, why are these places that are so dependent on these programs voting for people who want to get rid of them?
Mm-hmm. And you talk to voters. You've talked to hundreds of voters. Why don't we center for a moment on the woman who you talk about in the Times piece, Pamela Doherty, I believe is her name, 43-year-old nurse, who herself had benefited from government support.
Exactly. This is a woman in her early 40s, who I met in Iowa, actually, back in 2012, for the 2012 caucuses, had a long talk with her at a campaign stuff for Rick Santorum, the conservative Republican senator who was running for president back then, and she was a Santorum supporter, and we got talking for a very long time. And And I just found her fascinating because this is a woman who had gotten a lot of support when she was younger. She had herself, you know, was in sort of dire straits in her early years. She'd had a couple of kids as a teenager, got married very young, got divorced young, and found herself on her own with a couple of kids in her early 20s. And but got government support to go to community college. Basically got taxpayer-funded tuition breaks to get through community college, got her nursing degree at community college, but has now become very staunchly conservative and staunchly anti-safety net because she now works at a dialysis center in a small town in Iowa. She's a nurse at this dialysis center, which provides free dialysis care to about 50 people in the town, in the area there. Dialysis care is covered almost entirely by Medicare in this country. And so she has these clients, these patients who come in every day and get their virtually free dialysis care. And most of them do not work, even though the idea behind paying for dialysis treatment is that hopefully people will be able to, you know, remain productive citizens and keep working. But all but a few people that she deals with there at the center do not work. And this drives her crazy. Every day she sees people coming in getting nearly free care from the government. They're also getting disability since most of them don't work. And it drives her nuts. And she thinks to herself, why is this? Why are these people getting this nearly free care? They don't deserve it. And what occurred to me was that what she was experiencing was sort of a very daily, familiar, intimate kind of friction against the safety net that is different from what we usually think of as, you know, we usually think people are kind of against welfare because it's that person off in the inner city who's collecting the welfare check who doesn't deserve it, sort of this person that may not look like you yourself. But in this case, these people that are people in her own community who look like her, who are coming to her center, who she sees every day, and that bothers her on this very, very daily, routine basis.
Mm-hmm. You do have to wonder about empathy, though. Aren't people who are on dialysis pretty sick? Don't you get a break if you're on dialysis, for heaven's sake?
Well, I guess not in her case. As she sees it, that this treatment, this fairly expensive treatment, is keeping them going, and is actually should be making it possible for them to still remain productive at some level, but instead she sees them as just kind of as layabouts who are using their condition, a condition that in some cases, let's face it, it was not unconnected to their own, you know, past behavior and sort of choices, and so she sees them as using that condition as an excuse to not work and to simply in some sense live off the dole.
Mm-hmm. Also joining us to talk about the same subject, and he came to our attention because he wrote a letter to the editor to the New York Times in response to Alec McGillis's piece, is Joseph Varga. He is a assistant professor of labor studies at Indiana University in Bloomington. Professor Varga, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you. And this matters only to people in academics. I'm actually an associate professor.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was recently promoted. And I wanted to thank Alec for writing his excellent piece and for doing investigative journalism, which we need more than ever.
Yes, we do.
And remind everybody to contribute to their public radio station.
Yes, thank you very much, Joseph. So
your
research shows similar kinds of things, that when people oppose welfare, there's a difference between how they view this. They see it as welfare, or they see it, if they've received it, as benefits.
Yeah, this came from, I mean, what I study is I'm studying the decline of union membership, which is fairly stark. And one of the things that I and other studies have found is that there's few things that connect voters to the traditional Democratic Party other than union membership. That is, there's almost a direct correlation. And with that decline, you've had voters moving in this direction, voting more towards Republicans. But what really sparked me looking into the phenomenon that Alec is looking at as well was a Tea Party rally that I attended here in Bloomington in 2010, and it was at the courthouse, and it was a tax day rally, and I talked to people all day there. And what I found was, I'm not going to say, 50%. But quite a few people, when I got around to asking them what they did, they said, well, they weren't working anymore. They were on disability or something where they were collecting some kind of government benefit. And almost to a person, they called those their benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And then would talk about, I mean, remember the Tea Party phenomenon supposedly came about with people complaining that we were paying the mortgages of irresponsible home buyers. And so these people, you know, positioned those who were getting something other than deserved benefits as welfare. And it was almost always a difference in the terminology. And then talking to them in a place with low population density of African Americans, a lot of them would use the phrase "the blacks" and say, "Well, you know, it's the blacks that get the welfare, and we, you know, what I get are my benefits that I earn."
Mm-hmm.
And I was really fascinated by this phenomenon. It's not a new phenomenon, of course, but that got me to start looking into why people are doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that's happening, Alec, and you make mention of this, is those people who are poor, who are receiving benefits, are not voting.
Right. That was sort of the other half of my argument. There's this notion out there that you've got these places, parts of the country, like eastern Kentucky, like rural Maine, that are voting for the people who want to take away their own safety net benefits. How could this be happening? And how could these people be? There's almost kind of a condescending kind of tone to a lot of these this questioning. How could these people be so dumb as to be voting for the person who wants to take away what they have? But if you look closer at it, what you realize is that the story is actually slightly different than that. The people who most rely on these benefits, whether it's, you know, in places like eastern Kentucky, the people who are most dependent on SNAP, on food stamps, on the Medicaid expansion, on disability, are people who are, by and large, not voting at all. They are, the levels of non-voting in these places are just shockingly high.
Mm-hmm.
They've gotten higher and higher. It's not just the numbers. I've encountered it when I go around the country talking to people and reporting. You see, just to see how disconnected a lot of people are, how just completely checked out they are from the political process, the basic civic process, just current events. You know, talking to people in the spring of 2012 in rural Tennessee who had no idea that Obamacare was about to be ruled on in the Supreme Court and actually didn't even really know about Obamacare itself.
Hmm.
This law that had been passed directly, you know, to help them. There's this deep disconnect among the people who most rely on the programs, partly, you know, because of the decline of unions.
That's right.
Part of this, as Joe mentioned, but then it's the people who are a notch or two above the neediest in these communities who are more and more voting Republican because they are bothered by what they see as this rising dependency around them. And yes, a lot of them are also themselves getting benefits. They might themselves be getting SNAP benefits, but one way to deal with the stigma of that is to point to the people who are getting more or the people who deserve it less, and to sort of displace the stigma from yourself onto your.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Who Turned My Blue State Red this hour, why poor areas vote for politicians who want to slash the safety net. We'll talk more about unions and how disappearance of unions. I mean, it's amazing. Coal miners not having union representation in some of the areas that we're talking about this hour, what difference that makes. Professor Vargaw has also looked at right to work and what that's done to all of this. But this whole idea of, you know, I get benefits, you get welfare, and there's a racial component to this, and you have to ask the question, what does this do for the Democrats? If you're seeing a lot of these places going red, it would strike me that the Democrats really have to get out the vote. It hasn't been real successful in some local elections, statewide elections recently. Will they be doing something different? So all of that's coming up, and we're welcoming your phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and Lisa Nalbandian joining me in our studios in Milwaukee with our year-end membership drive here on Wisconsin Public Radio. You count on WPR for conversations like the one that we're having right now, and we count on you to have these kinds of conversations. So your gift at this very moment makes a huge difference. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And last hour, Kathleen, we were able to welcome a new and returning member back to Wisconsin Public Radio. So thank you so much for all of your support. And this hour, Kathleen, our goal is 15 pledges. And happily, we already have a couple more.
Great.
We already
all
have
right.
a couple.
Thanks,
so we're looking
Great.
For 13 pledges this hour. Go to WPR.org and make your pledge or call 888-202-2552.
We're really happy that we can bring you two great hours of radio from 1 until 3, Monday through Thursday. KP and Scotty and I take pride in what we do, and we love it. We talk about books. We talk about Who Turned My Blue State Red. We talk about the elephants and what's in the mind of elephants. We talk about so many things mm-hmm. Monday through Thursday. We're here those days for you with all of these important topics.
And none of this is possible without your support, and your support can come in right now. Listener contributions make up about 40% of our budget. That's such a huge number.
Yes, it is.
And that's why we're here right now. 40% is huge. So go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And we both like this so much. Everybody here does. During this year-end membership drive, we have a special thank you gift. Ask for food for $20 when you give $60 or food for $40 when you give $120.
That's right. And when you give and you're doing the food for $40 or food for $20, think about breaking up those amounts into monthly sustaining gifts. And you can do that at $5 a month, $10 a month. So you're able to be set up as a sustainer. And then your thank you gift will provide meals to a Wisconsin food bank right in your neighborhood, right near you. Get started right now. Just go to WPR.org, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552.
I was driving along and they started talking about being ADD. And I'm ADD. I consider it a blessing now because they had talked about a book called You Mean I'm Not Lazy, Crazy, or Stupid. It pointed out things and it made things understandable for me, so it really changed my life. I'm John Ink from Wausau, Wisconsin, and I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, and it is my source for a clear view of the world.
Make your donation in support of all of the programs that you really do love. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Lisa and I are asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. This is our year-end membership drive. Your pledge might be, $5 a month, maybe $100 a month. We appreciate your gift, and actually we count on your gift.
Mm-hmm, that's really true. And I just want to just take a brief moment here to say thank you for spending your afternoon with Wisconsin Public Radio. And you think about when you started listening, maybe you found us the old-fashioned way by like tuning the dial or scanning the dial, or maybe a friend recommended that you tune in. But you're here with us right now because you like what you hear.
And because you like what you hear, please help pay for your public radio station. You choose the amount. $5 a month is really a very good starting point, or whatever you find comfortable. And become our next new member. Hey, there you go. Mm-hmm. Next new member.
Love it.
Yeah. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You know, Kathleen, I mentioned that we already have a couple of pledges on the board, but we don't have any new members this hour yet. So I think that's a good call out for some new members. 888-202-2552 or online, WPR.org.
We hear great stories from WPR listeners every day, and we hear from you who call in. I love the call-in part of this program. Our calls are usually about how WPR has touched your life, and the donor comments you hear during this pledge drive are really great examples.
Yeah, they really are. You know, you read these and you hear them on the air, and it just reminds us how we're all connected throughout this entire state and really beyond. We love great radio shows, programs that engage us 1 hour, inspire us another, and probably make us think every single hour that you tune in. So your contribution right now at WPR.org or 888 888- 202-2552 makes great WPR experiences possible for you and your entire community.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio at this very moment is a wonderful thing to do with a few minutes of your time. You just need to give us your name, contact information, how much you'd like to give, and then how you'd like to pay.
Your gift supports the stories and the programs that keep you connected to the world. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can also find out if your employer will match your donation. Pledge now. Ask your human resources department the next time that you get a chance.
Yeah, that's a really, really good idea, Kathleen. And something to think about, too. Even if you're retired, you could still possibly qualify for employer matches. So if you're retired, don't feel like you shouldn't check because it's worth the check. So pledge now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and then check and see if you can get your pledge doubled.
Absolutely a good idea. And also another good idea this holiday season, support the radio you love, give something extra, ask for Food for 20 when you give $5 a month, or Food for 40 when you give $10 a month. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
A donor from Franklin called in a little bit ago and said, I'm donating for the wonderful programming not found anywhere else. Well, thank you so much for that support. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much, Lisa, and thanks, everybody, for all of your support every day, and particularly these days when we really need your support. We're talking about who turned my red state, my blue state red this hour, why poor areas vote for politicians who want to slash the safety net. The piece was written by Alec McGillis, appearing in the New York Times late in November. He is with us, as is a guest who has studied this and wrote an opinion piece to, or letter to the editor in response to what Alec had to write. Joseph Varga is joining us, Associate Professor of Labor Studies at Indiana University in Bloomington. We do want to take phone calls as well from the audience, so let's go to one of those calls, and then we'll get back to a study of unions and how Democrats will respond, which seems to me has to be increased voter turnout in the upcoming elections. We'll talk about that as well. But Jackie in Sun Prairie has a comment for both of you gentlemen. Hi, Jackie.
Call.
Hi, go right ahead, Jackie.
Okay, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just finished a book by Paul Krugman, who is the Nobel Prize-winning economist. And the book was written in 2007. And one of the things he pointed out in that book is that one of the reasons why the attempts to get national health care insurance for everyone failed, especially through the 50s, 60s, and 70s, was the fear, particularly of Southerners, that they were going to have to integrate the hospitals. So there's a definite race angle there when it comes to offering these kinds of help to people from the federal government, which I find very, very narrow. The other comment I was going to make is that I had a family member who had type 1 diabetes go through almost a year of kidney dialysis. He was eventually placed on disability and eventually got a kidney transplant. This was extremely painful. It was extremely stressful to the family and everybody concerned. And he's now on disability and trying to find a job that he can do. This disability insurance does not pay even enough to rent a small apartment unless he goes into disability. And he's a young man, and you can sometimes get low income apartments and that sort of thing. But mainly they're for the elderly.
Professor Varga, you want to start with response?
Yeah. I want to make sure that I'm clear that I'm not saying all working class people are all just racist thugs or something like that. There's certainly, I've encountered resentment among African Americans against people who don't work in their own communities. So it's not like it's just that the white working class is racist. But to the caller's thing, we are all, I think, in one way responding to Thomas Frank's What's the Matter with Kansas? Why people vote against supposedly their self-interest. And the connection with race, what Larry Bartles showed in his critique of Frank was that the phenomenon of working people moving to the Republican Party en masse beginning in the 70s was really a Southern phenomenon. And so I think the caller is really onto it. The use of race as a real divider to try to lure voters away from the Democratic Party really begins with Richard Nixon and his brilliant Southern strategy around the civil rights movement to lure and to tell white working Americans that they were now the ones who were being discriminated against because of the civil rights movement. So there's a lot of truth to that is what drives a lot of this politics. Is race, but again, it's not the only explanation. I think the bigger explanation goes to the second part of the caller talking about disability and talking about the lack of opportunity. I believe we are in serious trouble in the transitions that are occurring in our economic system right now. So all of these processes of workers either abandoning politics altogether or moving towards more authoritarian politics, which we see in Trump, I think have really been accelerated post-2008-2009 recession. That has really changed the economic landscape to a much bleaker picture where we now have worker participation rates at historic lows.
Mm-hmm.
So we're now facing a new economy that's really discouraging to workers, particularly workers without a college degree. And that was borne out by the recent study that everybody's talking about by the two Princeton economists, Deaton and Case, who are saying that there are shocking rises in mortality rates among white males without college degrees, mainly in the Midwest as well. So,
And let me ask you, Alec, to respond to something that Joe has written about frequently, and you mentioned in your article about unions. I find this just flabbergasting, the decline of local institutions, which is making people poorer in many of these areas, as well as poorer all over the country. While the United Mine Workers of America once drove turnout in coal country, today there is not a single unionized mine still operating in Kentucky. That's flabbergasting. Isn't it, Alec? Alec, are you there? Let's have you respond to that. Joe.
Yeah. It's a really interesting phenomenon. Of course, right now, what you're getting in a lot of polls with the Bevin election in Kentucky are people saying they won't vote for any Democrat anymore because of Obama, and I think a lot of that is racial as well. But they're saying he's had a war on coal. And what you see if you actually study the state of Kentucky and their economy is that the decline of coal in the GDP of Kentucky really accelerates during the Bush administration and was well underway when President Obama was elected in 2008. So, yeah, the decline of unions as an organizing principle, that again, I'm going to reiterate how important that was in mooring people's political positions, even if they had disagreed with some of the more progressive social positions, they often would vote based on those economic positions that were connected to their union. But, yeah, there is no piece of coal in the state of Indiana that is mined by a union worker anymore either. And this used to be a union stronghold here in southwestern Indiana. So it's a phenomenon that we're seeing all over the place. But in Kentucky, the decline of the coal industry started well before the current moment. But a lot of the rhetoric you're seeing is that it's a war on coal that's based on the Obama administration's recent EPA regulations that they were trying to put in place.
More phone calls in a moment. Who Turned My Blue State Red is the focus of our conversation this hour with Alec MacGillis, who wrote a piece in the New York Times end of November that got a lot of response, including from Joe Varga, who is also with us, a professor at Indiana University in Bloomington, and he is a labor studies specialist, and so he responded, and we're looking at all of these factors this hour. Welcoming your calls, too, and thank you for yours, Jackie. Our number on air is 800 416-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandi, and this is listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is our year-end membership drive. It is time for you at this very moment to think about how much you've learned from and enjoyed WPR programs in 2015, and I'll bet you have learned so much, and to think about how you would like to keep them going in 2016. And then you take some action. With your gift, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
So, Kathleen, during the last break, I mentioned, you know, it'd be great to see some new members. And we have three that have just come
in.
So thank you so much. Our goal this hour is 15 pledges, and we're just looking for a handful more. So please go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and make that pledge of support.
Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed every single day. You enjoy this program's Orbit Pastor, Radio Lab, Old Time Drama, Joy Cardine, Larry Mueller, all of these programs that you've come to rely on.
WPR gives you, what do we like to say, like a window to the world like nowhere else. So make the pledge right now. Support the exciting mix of programs, of shows that you rely on every single day. Do that with your contribution right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A sustaining membership is a gift that keeps on giving. You may want to think about this. Your membership will not have an expiration date.
Yeah, and that's because the monthly deductions from, let's say, your bank account or charges on your credit card or debit card, it automatically renews every single year. So, as Kathleen said, give the gift that keeps on giving by becoming a sustainer with a monthly gift and pick the amount that's whatever works for your budget. Just do it all at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars, and we do get funding from the federal government and also from the state, but listener contributions make up the single largest source of our income.
Yeah, that's really true. So your support is vital, vital to keep Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. So now you know how important it is. Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, I'm John White. Let's talk about public radio. I've been listening to public radio for about 15 years. Civil discourse makes public broadcasting all the more valuable because it sifts out the noise, the anger, and agenda setting of commercial media. That's why public radio is my source for the gold standard in fair and honest discussion.
Pledge at WPR.org, 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian. And quite simply, we're asking, and importantly, we're asking for your support of WPR during our year-end membership drive. Your gift might be $10, $20 a month, $5 a month, whatever amount. We thank you for it.
Mm-hmm. And you think about what the world has to offer, and you might think, gosh, if I lived in a big city, I'd be able to do so much more. But really, you get all of that intelligence, all of that conversation, all of that right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Whether you live in a small town or a big city or in between, when you listen to WPR, you're in a global sphere. You hear from people all over the world, reporters, experts, analysts, people who are in the forefront of their fields.
And maybe you've never pledged to WPR before. So today, you can find out how it feels.
Yes, you can. It feels good. It feels great to support something you love, something that you use and you rely on it every single day. So put your money where your values are. You may want to make your first ever pledge of $5 a month. That will make you feel really good.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, isn't it though? And that's something you can do at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You come to the Ideas Network because there's so many important and interesting issues covered every single day. You simply rely on these discussions at WPR. And that's why your gift during this year-end membership drive, your gift right now, is so important.
So help us put a strong finish on 2015 so we can keep bringing you the issues and talk in the months ahead. Make your year-end gift at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
We just need a couple more pledges this hour. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and make that pledge.
Thank you so much for all of your donations. I'm donating, a donor from Franklin said, for the wonderful programming not found anywhere else, mm-hmm. which pretty much says it all. That's true. We also want to remind you, Lisa and I, that this holiday season, we have something extra that...
Oh, yes, that's right.
You can give, really.
Yeah, so when you give, you can ask for food for 20 when you give $5 a month, and food for 40 when you give $10 a month. And that, your thank you gift then supports local food banks right in your area. So you can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much, Lisa, and thank you, everybody, for all of your support. Who turned my blue state red? Why poor areas vote for politicians who want to slash the safety net? It's what we're talking about this hour of the program. We have two guests with us, Alec McGillis, former staff writer at Slate. He is now writing for ProPublica. This piece appeared in the New York Times on November 20th. Joseph Varga, professor, associate professor in the Labor Studies Department at Indiana University, and he's a former team shop steward and longtime labor activist. We're welcoming phone calls for both of them at 800-486-8655. Alec, does all of this mean deep trouble for the Democrats? Has it already meant deep trouble for the Democrats in maybe not national elections, but in state and local elections?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's a big part of why the Democrats are doing so terribly in not just in state and local elections, but also in the midterm elections for federal office, for Senate and Congress in the midterm years, when the Democrats do so terribly, they have a real problem in large swaths of the country, which doesn't show up that much in the presidential elections, because the Democrats do have managed to cobble together a pretty solid electoral map in the presidential years, but below that level, they're in really big trouble. And you know, one might look at it and say, well, you know, what's the problem if they keep winning the White House, and what why does it really matter if they're not doing so well at the state level? But you look at something like Obamacare, this major initiative, major, you know, this huge historic accomplishment for the Democrats nationally. That accomplishment doesn't mean that much if it keeps being undermined at the state level. If you have governors who are right. able to reject the Medicaid mm-hmm. expansion, as is happening across the South, or even give up the Medicaid expansion, as might happen in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Professor Varga, what do you think?
Yeah, I think what the Democratic Party is facing and what the Republican Party has created is a small-d Democratic deficit. I think part of the problem, I brought in the race issue in my letter about Alex's piece, but I don't want to make like that's the whole story. I think the real story is who is representing the working poor. I don't think they really have representation at the federal level and oftentimes at the state level. I don't think low voter turnout has happened by mistake. I think that the Republican Party recognizes that the less turnout they get, and this is proven out in the presidential elections, the higher the turnout, the more it favors Democrats. So they have launched a 30-year campaign that says government is a mess. It's the problem. It's not going to solve your problems. You need to try to solve your problems on your own. And as conditions get worse, people, I think, would either go one of two ways. They would move to the extremes politically, or they would give up politically. They would not vote at all. They would remove themselves mm-hmm. from the political system. So I think we have, you know, the question that I've been trying to answer for a long time is, did the working class leave the Democratic Party, or did the Democratic Party leave the working class first? Mm-hmm. In an area like this, where we used to have some 4,500 factory jobs right outside of Bloomington, in the post-NAFTA era, we are down to 325.
Ooh-wee.
And those were jobs that really, really mattered and created, literally created a middle class in this area.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say NAFTA, which was signed by Bill Clinton to people around here, they will often, they'll spit on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
They'll, you know, they're very angry about it still.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people don't feel like their interests are represented by the Democratic Party, and we do a terrible job of informing voters as Alec mentioned before, about what are the basics of even the Affordable Care Act. I think most people don't even know. So,
yeah. Well, Alec, let's bring into play here the other issue that has been front and center for a long time, and that's the incredible wealth inequality in this country, and those at the top are really doing very, very well. The gap keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Bernie Sanders has made it the focal point of his campaign. Why don't the people you talk to blame the rich for their circumstances instead of blaming those who are worse off than they are?
That's a very good, that's sort of the big question hanging over all this, why the sort of the anger and the resentment is directed downward at people below them in their communities rather than upward at the people at the top or at the larger system and the inequities of the larger system. I think it's partly because those things are abstract to people. Whereas the people you see around you who you feel are getting benefits undeservedly are people you see every day. It's the guy who lives across the street who's on disability, but you see him going fishing every other day when he could be working. So it's just, again, it's just a matter of the proximity and the familiarity of it. But it's also because people, as Joe was just saying, there's not really someone making the case to people about those larger problems and larger inequities. There's not people. The Democrats have to a great degree kind of abandoned a lot of these areas. Have kind of written them off, and they're not really visiting these places anymore to reach people and to make that case to them. Going along with with the income inequality that we have in this country is an increasing amount of regional inequality. We have parts of the country that are doing way better than others, and I really fear that people in the better off parts of the country, including people who are sort of liberal minded politically and in theory, would say that they care about people of lesser lesser means and great needs, are in fact just not really thinking about these parts of the country anymore because they've become so removed from them.
Right.
And you're just, there's just sort of a out of sight, out of mind element to how people, including Democrats in sort of more prosperous areas of the country, regard these parts of the country that are not doing so well.
We have time for one more phone call. Gene in Menominee. Hi, Gene.
Hi. I just have a comment in that a lot of the issues, like with Joe fishing, is that he can't find a job.
Mm-hmm.
And that if we tie the benefits, whether it's unemployment compensation or whatever, to working and then provide them with public sector jobs if they can't find, if there isn't something available in the private sector, then we eliminate that issue whereby people say that this guy is capable and he's not working, because we do provide work opportunities that would also provide a whole lot of extra jobs in the public sector, which we've diminished significantly these past few years, and thus really take care of the full unemployment. There certainly is significant need for help in terms of infrastructure and parks and whatever, where the folks could be put to good use, and for those folks that choose not to, for those individuals, you want to provide soup kitchens or something so they don't starve to death, but you don't provide them with welfare or any of those types of benefits.
Professor Varga, what do you think?
Yeah, I was listening to Bernie Sanders speak the other day on television. He said, if you get me a room full of Donald Trump supporters and allow me to talk to them and have them listen to me, I could get them to vote for me. Because what he's talking about is, when you look at inequality in the United States, the lowest points of inequality, the time when we were the most egalitarian, was the 50s through the 60s, the period of highest union density, when our Congress actually debated a full employment bill, when the minimum wage actually kept up with inflation, when there were actually jobs policies and protections of domestic industries. So if you look at that, that's where the Democratic Party, and this is part of Right to Work, which I've written about as well, right to work cuts off the ability of labor unions to collect dues to do political activity, and they cannot influence the political system without that ability to affect political activity, and so nobody is representing the working people. And then somebody like Sanders comes along, and he's making sense, but he's not really being heard. And I think that would be an attractive message to a working class that, yeah, you're right, that's why people are going fishing. They don't have anything else to do. Our economy is looking bleaker and bleaker. Most workers are becoming more and more redundant through technology, and we're looking at a post-work world, and nobody is really doing anything about it.
Well, thank you both very much for being with us. I hope you can return, and thanks for writing the article. It has sparked so much interest, Alec. Thank you, and Joe Varga, thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Conversation on who turned my blue state red, why poor areas vote for politicians who want to slash the safety net. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and we are in our year-end membership drive on Wisconsin Public Radio. You know by now your support is the foundation of all of the conversations that you enjoy every single day, every single hour. Make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've been enjoying this conversation about the shifting political landscape in the United States, and most importantly, like why this could be happening. And I just feel like this is such a good example of that in-depth political analysis that you're just not going to find anywhere else.
So take a few minutes to make this hour, and this is just a little bitty hour. We have so many thousands of hours. Choose a gift that works for you. Make your pledge. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And during this holiday season, give something extra when you support WPR. Your donation makes the programs you love possible. And you can ask for food for 20 when you give $60, or food for 40 when you give $120.
These are thank you gifts, and they provide meals to people facing hunger in your area through regional food banks. So you can do two good things with your gift to WPR. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
I would ask you, if you're a listener, you know, why do you listen? And if you're listening now, then you want to be listening in the future. And if you've listened in the past and the future rolls around and it's not there, you won't have anything to listen to.
And I guess I would tell you that it's NPR and WPR, National Public Radio, Wisconsin Public Radio. And you are its public. And the funding for WPR and NPR comes from you.
I'm Larry.
I'm Ellie.
And we're from Madison, Wisconsin.
And please join us as sustaining members of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I listen to public radio and I'm a sustaining member. That's kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. Go to WPR.org, 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during our year-end membership drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian. We're asking for your support, $10, $15 a month. Whatever you can, we thank you for it.
That's right. And think about, is WPR worth $4 a day to you, just $4? If so, consider becoming a member of the 9XM Leadership Circle. 9XM members are listeners who contribute $1,200 or more a year to support WPR programs. And that works out to just under $4 a day.
So if you find you've been getting more value from WPR in the past year, consider a contribution that puts you in the 9XM Leadership Circle. Make your gift now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
WPR around the country, around the state, has this reputation, and that reputation is for quality and substance. Your contribution in the past has gotten us, you know, where we are today. And your pledge today, right now, will take this kind of strength far into the future.
It's your dollars that give Wisconsin Public Radio the means to keep that quality and substance that you count on in our programs every day. Pledge your support now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You know, at some point, you just started to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, and that's when you join the WPR community as a listener. You started listening every single day. And after a while, you might think, yeah, it might be time to join this community as a donor. And I think today is the day for you. So funding the great programs on WPR is a group effort. So join that group effort.
You know, we do this together. It's one pledge mm-hmm. at a time, $1 at a time. If you've never given up before, if you've never given before, you could start with a donation of $5 a month. And it's very easy to set the whole thing up. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You might be thinking, yep, I've already made my pledge this year, or maybe you're a sustaining member, so you know you give every single month. Thank you so much for all of those gifts. And we'll gladly accept your extra gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll help make this drive successful, and you'll support the programs that you enjoy and believe in every single day.
You can also help other people this year-end drive, this holiday season. Support the radio you love. Give something extra. Ask for the Food for 20 when you give $5 a month, or Food for 40 when you give $10 a month. That's all, again, at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Joe and Peggy from Oregon say, I've been a listener of WPR for about 20 years. Ooh. WPR is my source for accurate and unbiased news reporting. In a world with so much biased and partisan noise, I need something I can trust. I'm donating today to do my part in ensuring this continues. Thank you so much, Joe and Peggy. Join them, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much, Lisa, and thanks, everybody, for all of your pledges of support. We really can't do this without you. I hope you know that it's you. We need you. We need you, so we'll keep giving you great programs, and then you got to help us financially. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.